translation of the two verses together. When the eyes lose their power to see color or form due to morbid affliction of the optic nerve, the sense of sight becomes deadened. The living entity who is the seer of both the eyes and the sight loses his power of vision. In the same way, when the physical body, the place where perception of objects occurs, is rendered incapable of perceiving, that is known as death. When one begins to view the physical body as one's very self, that is called birth, purport. When one says, "I see," this means that he sees with his eyes or with his spectacles. He sees with the instrument of sight. If the instrument of sight is broken or becomes diseased or incapable of acting, then he as the seer also ceases to act. Similarly, in this material body, at the present moment, the living soul is acting, and when the material body, due to its incapability to function, ceases, he also ceases to perform his reactionary activities. When one's instrument of action is broken and cannot function, that is called death. Again, when one gets a new instrument for action, that is called birth. This process of birth and death is going on at every moment by constant bodily change. The final change is called death, and acceptance of a new body is called birth. That is the solution to the question of birth and death. Actually, the living entity has neither birth nor death, but is eternal, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Nahanyate Hanyamane Shariri. The living entity never dies, even after the death or annihilation of this material body. A blind man has the ability to see. A dumb man has the ability to speak. Because ultimately the soul has all these abilities. Due to some reaction, it's severe sinful reaction, one may be born or acquire the disability of not being able to see, of not being able to speak, of not being able to hear, or to have these and other similar functions impaired. But actually the soul has the ability to see, hear, smell, taste, feel, touch, all these sensory abilities. But when he doesn't want to see Krishna, or hear Krishna, or taste Krishna, when he wants to use his senses for his own sense gratification, then that in itself is sinful and is the cause of acquiring various kinds of bodies with various levels of sensory perception and sensory abilities. Srila Prabhupada explained, or Shastra explains, that those who, in the human form of life, like to unrestrictedly eat meat, then they may become in their next life a tiger. They'll get the tiger has ability to eat meat raw. He doesn't take cooked meat. Or if one is addicted to sex, then he may get the opportunity to become a monkey or a pigeon. And even sometimes old men whose sexual gland is worn out by overuse, they may have the sexual gland of a monkey put into their body so that they can go on enjoying that. So better to be a monkey. That's what you want, then. Why all this problem in human life? In human life, to arrange for, to have that sexual indulgence, one has to bring money. Mi nun, mi pu yin is a Thai saying, which means if you have money, you have a girl. Either you pay directly or indirectly. You have to flatter them by gifts and all this kind of thing. Svajana akya dasyo, this saying is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, which Srila Prabhupada extrapolated. It means family members or thieves in the guise of family members. So Srila Prabhupada extrapolated this phrase to explain that if one is walking home and someone attacks him and takes all his money, then he'll be very upset. Oh, thieves took my money. When he goes home, he gives all his money to his wife. So it works out to be the same thing. Of course, you may think, from the thief I get nothing. From the wife I get sense gratification. But the point is, the money's gone. That little sense gratification. If the thief takes it, the thief gets sense gratification for the money. If the wife takes it, then I get. So all this seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, tasting, feeling, not in relationship to Krishna, gives us various opportunities to indulge in various kinds of tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing, touching, thinking in various species of life. Nana joni shada fire kadarja bhakanga kare tara janma adhapateja. Narottam Das Thakur has explained, karma kanda, jnana kanda, shakari bishera bhanda, amrita baliya jeva khai, that activities devoid of Krishna consciousness, even those prescribed by the Vedic literatures in karma kanda or jnana kanda, it's all pots of poison. But persons who are addicted to this, they think it's very nice. And as a result, they take birth in, or they wander in various species of life in which some of them one has to eat disgusting kinds of food. And gradually one is degraded more and more and more. So the aim of life is to get this spiritual body. The aim of life is to get a life, real life. Real life means in service of Krishna. We say life in the material world. Life in the material world means death in the material world. Everything we're doing throughout life just leads up to another death, and another death, and another death, and another death, and another death. There was some experiments conducted by psychologists on monkeys, that they would put some banana inside some kind of device. So the monkey would reach for that, and as he reached for that, something would come and beat him. So as soon as he gets to the banana, gets beaten. So after some time, he's only looking at the banana and saying, "I'd like to have it," but he doesn't. He thinks the pain of getting it is too much. "I'd love to have the banana, but the pain of getting it is not worth it." So in the same way, in material life we strive for happiness. And we should be intelligent enough to understand that the pain of getting that very insignificant amount of happiness, it's just not worth it. But we're not as intelligent as the monkey. Well, the monkey, of course, that's a very simple cause and effect. Go to take the banana, get beaten. Some stick, automated stick, or whatever it may be, comes to beat him. Or he puts his hand out and the hand gets beaten with a stick. So, Of course, material life, it's much more complex. We may not see the stick immediately. Often people ask, why is it that bad people, they seem to thrive, whereas good people, they seem to suffer? But it's not like that. The reactions will come in due course of time. Often the bad people, they are given a chance to fully indulge in their bad nature, and so they can get full reaction. And the good people, they're also bad. What we call good people. Good people means they want to enjoy sense gratification separate from Krishna, but in a manner which is not as bad as the others, who simply want to grossly exploit others. The good people, they want to subtly exploit others, or whatever it may be. Everyone is forgetting Krishna. So this is the kindness of the Supreme Lord. Maya, this term, Maya is sometimes described, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is described as Pishachi, seems to be just like a witch, makes all kinds of horrible arrangements. But then again, Maya means mercy. So, if we can understand that this is mercy, to make this suffering in the material world is a mercy to educate me that my real happiness is in the service of Krishna. Persons who are superficially theistic may lose their faith in God when they see there's so much suffering in the world. Actually, no one can explain why there is suffering in this world except the Vaishnavas. That it's Purusha Sukha Dukha, and what is that? Purusha Sukha Dukha Nam Bhutritve Hetu Ruchite. We are the cause. It's not that the first ever woman ate an apple, and therefore the whole of the human race has to suffer. That's not the reason. It's not because of Satan, who's some rival of God's, who, you know, God's sitting up in heaven scratching his head thinking what to do with Satan. It's such a headache for me. There's no such thing. Maya is the servant of Krishna. She's fully in accord with him. So the cause is our own. Every single person suffering in this world, the cause is his own obstinacy of not wanting to serve Krishna. And superficially theistic persons, there's so much in illusion that they think that the world is made by God for us to enjoy. And if we're good, he will bless us, and then we'll enjoy this world. And if there's too much suffering, then if there's more suffering than they can imagine all at once, then they think, oh, maybe there's no God, or God isn't good, or God isn't all-powerful. Because they have a faith in God, but that faith is based on a wrong principle. They never understood the basic principle, that I am meant for his enjoyment, not that he is meant for my enjoyment. Most so-called theistic people, even Vaishnavas, they presume that he is meant for our enjoyment. And his job is to make everything nice for my enjoyment. Whereas the actual situation is that we are meant for his enjoyment. That's why Vaishnavas, they can understand how Maya is mercy. When there's suffering or difficulty, they think, this is Krishna's mercy to help me realize how miserable is this material world, because I'm so attached to this material world. The difficulties become, for a devotee, the difficulties are the stepping stones by which he can cross over Maya and come to pure devotional service. You know what stepping stone is? Stepping stone? Just like in the mud, here in the rainy season there's so much mud, so you put some stones. So in this way you can cross over the mud without getting muddy and without being without getting your foot stuck in the mud. So devotee sees difficulties not for the non-devotee, he doesn't see the stepping stone, so he just goes in the mud and gets dirty and gets caught in the mud and has so many difficulties. But the pure devotee, he sees or has pointed out to him the stepping stones. These difficulties, they're the stepping stones by which we can cross over Maya. And we find that all the narrations of the great devotees are full of the narrations of the difficulties they went through. And that Dhruv Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Pandavas, Hanuman, they all went through so many difficulties and struggles to serve Krishna. Prabhupada. No one knew what a great devotee Prabhupada was. He's a devotee. There's so many devotees. But just like Hanuman, that as a child, he was so powerful, he was causing so much mischief in his childish way, that he was cursed, not exactly a curse, but some control there, that now you forget how powerful you are. When it's needed, you can remember. So that later that came out, that he was, his power came, he remembered that, or that became manifest when it was needed in the service of Ram. So we may not know who is a great devotee. I mean, often it's misunderstood who is a great devotee. People tend to think that, well, very materialistic people, they think, well, someone who's the head of an ashram, or someone who has a big position. That's one reason why we have positions. There's no real need to have sannyasis in Vaishnava societies, because Vaishnavas are supposed to be sarvopadhivinir muktam. They're supposed to be free from all designations. Then why are we having this designation sannyasi? That's meant for foolish people. They'll see, oh, very big, very important. All right, let's listen to what he says and take it seriously. Or let's do some service to help him with his service. But those who are more intelligent, they don't need the formal designation. They can recognize who is a Vaishnava without this, without the official designation. And it may be that someone's interested in getting that designation because he's on the platform of designations. He's not. When one is actually free from all designations, then he should become a sannyasi. If one wants to become a sannyasi just to get a big designation, he's absolutely not understood what Vaishnava sannyasi is meant for. Vaishnava sannyasi is meant for preaching Krishna consciousness more than renunciation. It's not meant that Vaishnava sannyasis have to roast themselves on hot coals or put themselves in icy water. It's not required or even desirable, because how can Krishna be served by doing that? Aradito yadi haris tapasah tatakim. What's the point of doing austerities if one is worshipping Krishna? Anaradito yadi haris tapasah tatakim. And if one doesn't worship Krishna, then again, what's the point? If you are worshipping Krishna, there's no need to. And if you don't worship Krishna, then there's no benefit in doing it. Either way, there's no point in artificial austerities. So, Vaishnava sannyas is meant for preaching. Of course, it also means to be free from family life. But that freedom from family life is not just so that one can be freed from that difficulty. We find so many times, I'm taking sannyas, my wife is so much problem, and this and that. And they leave their wife, yes, now I'm renounced, but then they find someone who they dream is going to be better. Some younger, more beautiful model. And they think, well, actually, Vaishnav Grihastha life is very good. And I'll get remarried, like this. Yes. Remarriage is called, what is that? A triumph of hope over experience. I think it was Samuel Johnson, someone said that. So, Vaishnav sannyas, that's meant for preaching sarva padivi nirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. For preaching bhakti, which is beyond designations. But he may accept designations just for the sake of people. Because most people, they're on the platform of designations and they don't recognize, they don't have the ability to recognize who is fit to hear from or what is fit to hear. And they presume that whatever is pleasing to their perverted senses, then this is very good. Just like the example was given, we just reading a few verses before. Like the hunter plays the flute for the deer to be attracted. Sounds very nice to the deer, but the deer gets shot. So he's attracted to the wrong thing. So preaching can be unusual like that. Sometimes it means presenting the wrong thing just to give the right thing. Just like the mother, the child is sick. The mother presents the sweet. Open your mouth. The sweet is going to make the child more sick. So he opens the mouth and with the other hand quickly throws in the medicine, which the child doesn't want to take, but which he needs to take. So if the child had to, if the child was told this person is going to give you a sweet and this, and told the other person is going to give you the medicine, then they think, oh, I'll take the sweet. He doesn't know that the sweet will, for him in his condition, the sweet is poison. And the bitter tasting medicine is medicine. Of course in India they use the word medicine for pesticide also. But, so. So he's not in a, because he's on the sensual platform, not on the platform of intelligence. He can't distinguish who is actually his benefactor. He thinks that the one who gives me sweet, he is my benefactor. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what is his real self-interest. So in the same way, people like gurus. There's a guru, or so-called guru, coming to Ceylon soon, in 2 days. There's posters all over the town advertising that he's coming, but no one will benefit. In fact, we can benefit if we don't go to see him. If we keep away, the further we keep away, the better. Because he's a cheater. He's taking the position of a guru and a saint and a paramahamsa without teaching sarva padivi nirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. He's not teaching pure devotional service. So, but people like, what is he? Does he teach anything? He must teach something. What does he teach? Any idea?
Some kind of
bhagavad. Oh, I saw that he teaches nitya dhyana, daily meditation. I saw in Bangalore. So people, they think, well, that's very nice. But they don't know what the goal of life is. Meditation is taught nowadays to lessen your blood pressure, to become free from stress, so that you can go back into the world and compete as an enjoyer, competing with so many other would-be enjoyers. So people cater to this and they become very popular. But doesn't help anyone. And if we tell what people don't like to hear, then many people they think it's wrong from the very beginning. Oh, you shouldn't upset anyone. Oh, you shouldn't say like that. So preaching means that we may show something, some attraction. That's Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur called this morphology. He referred to morphology and ontology. Morphology means the outward show, building big temples. So worldly people will come. Of course, the big temple is also for the glorification of Krishna. But Krishna doesn't need a big temple. He already has so many big temples. He's not. However nice a temple we can build in this world, won't be anything like the temples he already has in the spiritual world. So the big temple is built to give us service to do and to attract materialistic people. That you come here, it's very nice, so that we can impress on them the point that we are meant to serve Krishna. So like this, designations, positions, that also position, there's GBC, temple president, so that's required in the management structure of an organization. But it also, people, that's also for preaching, that people think, oh, here's someone very important. Actually, any devotee, they don't have to have a position or a designation. If they're speaking the message of Bhagavad Gita as it is, then they are very important because the message is important. It's not the position that is important, it's the message. But people, they're dull-headed, foolish, and overcome by mayavad, by which they think that no message is really important because all the message others are the same. So there's no real need to listen to any message, because anyway we're all God anyway. So the Mayavad, this popular Mayavad, has killed the ability of people to hear any message of Shastra, because there's no need. And if they listen, it'll just like they think, well. Bhakti, yeah, I like all the parts are the same, so yeah, I like this one, so I listen to this. And this speaker is better than that speaker because they tell such nice stories and makes me cry and I feel so nice. Everything on the sensual platform, they didn't get above, they didn't even come to the Indriyani Parani Ahur, Indriyabhya Parangmanaha, they didn't even come to the mental platform, just on the on the lowest sensual platform. What? Well, you could say it's on the platform of the mind. It's pleasing to my mind. What's pleasing to my mind? What's pleasing to my senses? So this is all the cause of birth and death. To simply, what is pleasing to me? And the cause of freedom from birth and death is to understand what is pleasing to Krishna. That's all. It's a simple point. So, is there any question? Yeah.
Sometimes you get question, especially in the West, that there are so many spiritualists coming to the West and somehow or other benefiting people by propagating some idea of spiritualism, and many devotees came to Krishna for the true Sai Baba, what is actually beneficial, what is not beneficial?
Yeah, alright, I'll repeat the question. There's sometimes it's said that there are so many spiritualists and they're all propagating something good, And even some devotees, they came first to Sai Baba or whatever. There was one man in... I'll speak about him. So they're not that bad. They're not so bad. Well, maybe in some sense it's true that if people have some idea of God or spirituality, they can begin to relate to it, that could be said. Although in China, where all spiritual culture has been killed, still people are becoming devotees. There's no spiritualists, there's not been for generations, so-called spiritualists. Because it's the natural tendency of the soul to love Krishna. So they may say something good, just like they may say that we accept the Vedas. So that's good if they say that. But then the way they accept the Vedas is so wrong that whatever good they do is cancelled out by the bad. So, yeah, Vedic culture, practically Shankaracharya, he kept the Vedic culture alive when it was almost completely engulfed by Buddhism. So points like that, respect for the Brahmins, protection of cows. At that time there's also the respect for and worship of the king, which is a forgotten part of Vedic culture nowadays. So Shankaracharya, he kept this all alive. But then the philosophy, and that was considered a step up from Buddhism. In one sense, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in one sense it was a step up because it re-established the authority of the Vedas. But on the other hand, Vednamani abodh hoito nastik. What is that? Nirishavad bodhike adik. What is that second? Because the Buddhists do not recognize the Vedas, they are considered Gnostic, which is translated as atheists. Then, Veda Shray Bodhavad Buddha Kayadik. I can't remember exactly how the second line goes, but it means that Mayavad, which means they take the message of the Vedas and preach more or less the same thing as the Buddhists. So it's even worse. Veda Shray Nastik Kyavad Buddha Kayadik. That's it. Got it. At last. Third time. Lucky. So, it may be, but we have to be very careful about this, because unless one fully understands pretty much everything they say is poisonous, then the poison will remain. You have to... Okay, so Sai Baba, they say that the Upanishads are good. All right, that's good. But then when they say the Upanishads are meant for understanding him, that's blasphemy. It's highly poisonous. And we don't find many people, they come from Sai Baba to Krishna at all. And even if they do, if they still think that... By reading Prabhupada's books, one should understand that Sai Baba, Model 1, Model 2, or Model 3, whichever one it is, they're all rascals. They're demons. If we don't understand this, then we remain demons ourselves in the name of Krishna consciousness. Because we have sympathy for those who have taken the position of enemies of Krishna. They're Pondrak. Then we become a supporter of Pondrak, the imitation Vasudev. There was one man in Mangalore who had been, he was an older man, he'd been into Ram Krishna and all kinds of nonsense, rascal things like that, but especially Ram Krishna, for most of his life. And then he came to Krishna consciousness, but the Ram Krishna poison remained in him. And he used to say, well, actually it's good because I came to this through that. And I was saying, no. If that By Krishna consciousness, if you came out of that, that's good. Not that you think that it's a stepping stone to Krishna consciousness. So he was wanting to take initiation from me, and I didn't say yes, and fortunately he got initiated, fortunately for me, he got initiated by someone else in Krishna consciousness. But he never got the poison out of his system. And he was always very critical of devotees and promoting himself, and he went and did a Bhakti Shastri and got his Bhakti Shastri course, and he was advertising to everyone his Bhakti Shastri. And then finding too much fault in the devotees, he set himself up as a teacher, and he has a small group around him, and he teaches his own mixture of Bhagavad Gita as it is. He brings the Bhagavad Gita as it is and teaches Bhagavad Gita as it isn't, with all different kinds of speculations and songs and this and that. And he still thinks Ramakrishna is good. So, in a highly tangential way, you could say, maybe something there is good. But at the same time, it's just like, you know, I'm so thirsty. Here's something to drink. By the way, it's got cyanide in it. So you drink it, and my thirst got quenched. But then you're dead with the cyanide. So you can say it's something good. You're not thirsty anymore, but you're dead also. So you're feeling some good effect. But the side effect is so bad that it's better to remain thirsty. There are examples are given in the Bhagavatam. Crossing the ocean of material existence on a stone boat. Here's a boat made out of stone. So what will be the result? You go on a stone boat and you'll sink. Or you see a dog is swimming in the sea and you think, I want to cross from... I have to go from Chennai to, what's that, Port Klang. That's the port of Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I want to cross the sea. So the dog is swimming in the sea. Okay, I'll catch his tail and he'll carry me over. It's not a good proposition. The dog is not capable. He can hardly swim himself. He can't cross the ocean himself. So, if we think we'll catch the tail of a dog and he'll take us across the sea, it's a foolish proposition. I saw different Indian gurus in my youth, and the result of that was when I was first shown Prabhupada's books, I refused to look at them. Because I said that, well, I know, I've seen all these Indian Swamis, they're all cheaters. So, if one is attracted to that, then if one is at all sincere, then Krishna within his heart will reveal to him practically immediately that these people are all cheaters. If we're looking for the real thing, we may not even know what it is exactly, but Krishna will give us the intelligence to clearly understand what is not the real thing. I mean, anyone who's attracted to Sai Baba must be a rascal, isn't it? How could you be attracted to that rascal, thinking he's God, or thinking there's anything good about him? So superficial. What do people go for? Material boons. There's no discussion of anything of any value, of the what are the miseries of birth and death. What is the nature of God? Without any philosophy, they just say he's God. What does it mean? He's Bhagavan. What does it mean, Bhagavan? No idea, nor are they interested in discussing. So it's only for very superficial, insincere people. So you could maybe say that, yeah, Sai Baba helped me to come to Krishna. And I looked at him and I immediately understood this is not Krishna. And then there's one less I had to look at. So, anyone who has any sympathy for Sai Baba cannot make any advancement in Krishna consciousness. No possibility. What do you think? Is it possible?
Krishna, Rama, or me. I read a line in his book, think of Krishna, Rama, or myself.
Yeah, and he says that someone was telling me that he'd seen the devotees of Krishna, that, well, they haven't realized yet, but they're worshipping me. They didn't yet realize.
That photo, Krishna's photo, and they insert ugly face of...
I didn't see that, yeah. There's so many things. Venkatesh Subrabhatam, and they change and they put his name in. Is it? Yeah, there's no proper government in this country. Otherwise they should have hanged him long ago. They shouldn't allow people.
It's,
they got that also?
Yeah. And Kalki has Hare Kalki, Hare Kalki, Kalki, Kalki.
All right, you're going to go and do that show today?
Anyway,
you can, huh?
Anybody.
You tell them that you can take this point. You say, and just take one point. There's one certain so-called Paramahamsa coming now, and they've taken out Venkatesh Supreme. Now, who is Venkatesh? He is the Supreme Lord. He is Krishna, Narayana, Hari, recognized by all acharyas, all shastras since time immemorial. Now already they have this, they change it to Sai, and now they change it to this person also. So is this not sinful? Is he the cause of creation, maintenance and destruction of this world? When he gets diarrhea, can he even control his movements? And he can't. Then, and you're saying he's controlling the whole world? If he's Bhagavan, just like Pondraka was killed, let him come and kill me. Or Prabhupada used to say, I'll kick them in the face. What will they do? These people are very, very sinful. You see, they have all this RSS and they want to crush the Muslims and this and that. I'd say crush the Hindus, these rascals, cheetahs first. Actually, they don't like them either. I know they don't like Sai Baba, the RSS people. Once I was in a hostel program in Osmania University in Hyderabad, and at the end someone asked me, what do you think of Sai Baba? I just explained what is the nature of Bhagawan, and then how Jiva cannot be Bhagawan, and then I went through a philosophy, and then I said at the end, so anyone who says Sai Baba is Bhagawan, he's wrong, he's not, he's just a big rascal. And then they all clapped. I don't know if they're going to clap or shoot me or whatever. But they were. Then afterwards I understood they're RSS supporters. They don't like him. He's cheating. So this is... no wonder people are becoming Christians. I mean, if Christians, mostly they're becoming by chicken Christians or whatever. They give them a chicken every Sunday. So, just for material benefits. But then, Hinduism, so-called Hinduism, everything's so vague, and, you know, this Baba and this Bapa, and they have nothing even slightly resembling any substance to give. At least Christianity, they say, here's Jesus, you believe in him, and but in Hinduism, you know, it's everything all vague and nothing's clear. So if you have to think that this wretch, this rascal, he's God, and better to believe that Jesus is God. At least he had his saintly character. These people, they don't have anything resembling anything. What's saintly about them? I don't know. They're just like some kind of film star or something, with stupid people running around after them. It's just obvious that they're getting... It's this religious version of the Rotary Club. The Rotary Club is formed for everyone to praise everyone else. So they make a big Swami, He praises them, they praise him, and there's nothing, it's just mutual flattery. So we should praise Krishna instead of praising these people. There's nothing, there's no quality of a sadhu in these people. I mean, even you could say, like some of the traditional Mayavadis, they have some of the qualities of sadhus. Very well known, even now in Tamil Nadu, even though he passed away maybe 20 years ago now, the Chandrasekharendra. He was a sadhu, no one can deny. But these people, I mean, they don't have any qualities of a sadhu. Just by this Paramahamsa, whatever rascal, he's misusing the name. So he was there for so many years, and just by advertisement, he became big. That's all.
Just make sure people are making big advertisements.
Yeah. Just by advertisement, that's all. So you better distribute the books. Sometimes people might understand what's real and what's not. Bhagavatam is meant for that, distinguishing reality from illusion for the benefit of all. You can ask this guy, then if you're God, you just say what I ate for breakfast 3 days ago. Can you say? It's easy to understand their cheaters. But then this Sai Baba, he cheats and he says, well, I don't say I'm God, my followers say. But you accept it. You accept. In one purport, Prabhupada says this Krishna conscious movement is meant for killing all the bogus incarnations. So we can't physically kill them. Unfortunately, it's not, you know. In Kali Yuga, it's better not to start killing because it's. And everyone just starts killing left, right, and center. Isn't it? But we should kill them by exposing them to be such rascals. Yeah, this is good service. This we should do. So many devotees are talking about these gopi leelas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's leelas. All very nice, but we have some service right here now. You know, let's drive out. The Prabhupada said, my mission is to drive agnosticism out of the world. So let's try and do something to serve Prabhupada's mission. And then, Jai Prasade Pure Sarva Asha. Then we just have to serve his mission, and by his mercy, then everything else will come. You don't have to artificially try to be a gopi or anything else. Hare Krishna. Whenever anyone says the word Sai Baba, it gets me going. I really don't like that guy. A very strong and very healthy dislike for that person. Hare Krishna.